Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Good morning. You're listening live with Calling All Leaders and Healers with host Barbara White. Barbara White is a gifted intuitive, holistic therapist, and spiritual teacher. She is the creator of the self-acceptance process and has a master's in transpersonal psychology, eco-psychology, a diploma of homeopathy, and is a published author. Called the Midwife to the Soul, Barbara has ignited hundreds into knowing their inherent worth and facilitated the birth of their innate gifts. Barbara is the owner of the Accepted As I Am Center, certified in advanced auricular medicine, Shambhala Master, Reiki Master, Qigong Practitioner, and is a black belt in Isshirinu Karate. Her books, Why Self-Acceptance is So Powerful and Self-Acceptance Process and Magnificent You, are available on Amazon. Barbara's drive and passion to teach comes from knowing that if someone is willing to look within and grow, they can be a healer and leader to others. And now I give you your host, Barbara White.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to Calling All Leaders and Healers. I'm so grateful that you have taken this time to reconnect to what is real, to reconnect to your broader self that includes love, beauty, joy, nature, self, all of these aspects of self that we can easily forget when we get caught or hypnotized into the happenings of the day or hypnotized into thinking about what people are thinking about us. Isn't that a big one that can really hook the mind? So welcome to Calling All Leaders and Healers, where we hold the intention that by looking within and realizing the truth of your being, the wholeness of your being, that you become a leader and a healer to others. That capacity, that potentiality is within you, it's within me, and that is quite a shift to say that you, me, anyone that can look within and begin to connect has the capacity to wake up their family, their neighbors, to really, through that inner knowing, take action that is aligned with the energy of the cosmos, that through that alignment, us are able to make a difference on the planet. So thank you for listening. We will do a meditation and really preparing the space for my guest today. And again, it's just amazing to me, the incredible people that I get to connect with and get to let you know about their work and the difference that they're making in the planet. And Scott Brown, who wrote Active Peace, will be our guest in a little bit, talking about active peace, talking about what does that mean? What does that word mean? I can't wait for him to unpack that. It's two words together, peace and active. So the book is A Mindful Path to a Nonviolent World, and the foreword's by Andrew Harvey. So just a little bit about our guest from last month. Last month was Amy, and Amy Carell, I may be mispronouncing her last name a little bit, from Detroit Soup. And if you didn't get a chance to go to the website for that, please do. Detroit Soup is, over $800,000 she's raised for local Detroit activities. It's Detroit community. It's people of Detroit supporting people of Detroit. I mean, it's not waiting for some external force or power to come rescue. That it's actually Detroiters helping Detroiters. And the format is where people come with ideas that they feel will help the community, and they give a speech, and the diners actually vote on what idea they feel will help the most. And it's not a reality show. It's not people trying to impress people, that it's really about supporting your neighbor and supporting their message. And you can listen to archive of that show. I would highly recommend it. I felt so inspired by her. And you can also meet Amy at Detroit Soup and be part of the – come support the movement. It's on the next dinner, Sunday, September 25th. At 2900 East Grand Boulevard, doors open at 5 o'clock. And you can go onto DetroitSoup.com and get that information. And please be part of it. If you can't show up, then donate. And then here's the other thing I thought was really spectacular. They have guides on their website of how, if you would like to create a Detroit soup in your area, how wonderful is that? So thank you again for listening to Calling All Leaders and Healers. I am your host, Barbara White, and I'm excited. I'm excited for today because I know if you continue to listen and tap into this vibration that's calling you forward into more of who and what you truly are, there'll be something pretty amazing that will open and activate within you. So I like to think of what I'm drawn to talk about today before we bring on our guest is availability. And that the more that we are available to good happening through us, the more that you allow yourself to touch eternity and to realize that there's this energy that wants to come forward as you. You get to rise above, and not repress, but rise above your fears, your doubts, the stories that really keep us trapped. And that it's remembering that everyone has an ego. It's the ego is designed to keep you stuck or keep you from changing. And ego, to put it, you know, not over dramatically, the ego is out to kill you. It speaks first and it speaks loudest. And your ego can even disguise itself as self-love. It can begin to tell you that, you got to take care of yourself. Well, you got to take care of your own. And it sounds like it's self-love. It sounds like, or another way I hear the ego really hook people, and there's so many ways, but when I'm counseling people in relationship and they say, well, I don't want to tell him or her because I'll hurt their feelings. You know, it sounds pretty nice, but ultimately, if you are expressing the truth of who you're being, you're not going to be nice, you're going to be authentic. And you will ruffle, if you're truly being yourself, you will ruffle a few feathers. Try to say that five times fast. And being available to more love, more beauty, more joy is a practice. I think of Elizabeth Gilbert, her new book, Creativity. And she talked about how she had this idea for a book that about this woman in Minnesota with a certain kind of shoes that was in love with her boss, very specific idea. She decided to not write the book. And then she was traveling to the Amazon, and as she tells the story in her book, Creativity, and she was traveling to the Amazon, and she met a woman that said she's going to write a book. And she goes, oh, really? And the woman said, yeah, it's about a woman in Minnesota with a certain kind of shoe that's in love with her boss. And Elizabeth didn't get competitive or comparing. She actually got excited because she saw that this idea about this woman, this idea about this woman, this book she was going to write, was looking for some place to express, was looking for some place to come through. There is pure positive energy that is seeking to express as you. See, this idea was looking for somewhere to come through. It was looking. It's the same way that if you look at the history of any invention, there was actually many other people, sometimes upwards of 20 or 30 people that invented the same, were in the process of, either in the process or had invented the same exact invention, but didn't then take it forward into manifestation or into action. And when I bring on my guest, Scott Brown, I can't wait for him to speak about that, about how peace needs action. And so being available to love, being available to beauty, being available to creativity, being available to spontaneity. Can you in this moment invite more availability? And there's all sorts of peculiar ways that we can block our own availability. I found recently a way I was blocking my availability. Pardon me, my mouth's not working today. Hopefully it will start working in a bit. And the way I found that I was blocking my availability is I had confused self-care and boundaries with the flow of circulation. And what I mean by that is I caught where people were calling for my help to schedule sessions and such, and I was putting them off to the next day or the next week when I wasn't so busy. Sounds reasonable, right? But it truly wasn't. It really wasn't responding to the need of the moment. It truly wasn't being available to what was showing up. I was still trying to manage what was in front of me. I was still thinking I had to manage what was in front of me. premise of really responding to the need of the moment is also based on knowing your intentionality of where you're coming from. So for me, I know I'm not giving to appease a deity or be a good little girl or to find my worth. Because if you are giving or expressing or serving another to find your worth, then you will attract people that you'll form codependent relationships, or you're actually not really helping them. You're in a state of power. When you rescue somebody, and you know you're rescuing somebody when you have fear about what's happening in their life, you believe their story, number one. And number two, you know you're rescuing somebody when you're attached to the outcome. Do you hear me? That's really important. One, when you have fear or worry when you're helping them. Two, when you're attached to the outcome. So you're not really helping them. You're rescuing actually empowers the very thing you're trying to help. And two, it actually disempowers them because somebody will have to give you their power to be in that kind of dynamic. So I've gotten very clear over my 25 years of service that I'm coming from a place of giving love to feel love as me. And I believe you me, I have done, as we all need when we're coming into some form of healing work, be clear that we are in that place of almost a non-personal giving. That the individual is, of course, who I give to, but it's a very non-personal giving. Many of these principles I'm talking about right now, I will be teaching in the 7-month course, Self-Acceptance Process Certification. It's an amazing, empowering course of really embracing in an embodied way the leader and healer that you truly are. If you're interested in that, you can go to BarbaraWhite.com, and I just spelled my name with 6 letters. And at the top, you can see S.A.P. Self-Acceptance Process tab, and click on that. And because I am about putting the tools in your own hands so you can be a student to your own life, your own divinity, you'll see the syllabus on there too. So it's very organized. And been teaching that for about 10 years, so I'm very excited to bring that forward again for that. This will be the 10th year. It's in such a distilled, potent version. So being available, let's circle back, being available to what's showing up in the moment. That if someone is in front of you, then that is your holy moment. That is the moment in which you show up as the presence of love, spirit, or you don't. That we only, you, me, we all have only one purpose, and that is to be love. We have one purpose on this planet. And when somebody's acting violently or fearfully, it's because they've forgotten who they are. And as in the Course in Miracles, it talks about that we think we have many different problems, but we only have one, and that is our separation from God. And your separation from God does not mean some type of energy outside of you. It means yourself with a capital S, the love, the beauty, the Christhood, the Buddhahood that is within you. That creation, love, spirit is everywhere in its fullness and not in one place. And we see that in nature, that there's a representation of the microcosm and the macrocosm, that you are a complete expression of love, of spirit, of God, of nature, of Christ. So being available to that, being open to that. So my guest that I'll bring on in just a couple minutes now, Scott Brown, I met him originally at my rites of passage through Naropa University for the eco-psychology program. And immediately I could tell that this person was present to life, present to good, present to God, present to creation. He may not use the word God or the universe or nature. And I got great help from Scott. He did a process before we went out for our rites of passage. We met with Scott and Tina, and I can't remember the third person's name. But we met with people, and they got to help us to really get clear of what was coming up for us. You know, what triggers were being surfaced. And I always joke that when I did the rites of passage, it was like Morgan Freeman with a microphone screaming all my issues at me. Got a chance to love him, I did. And it was interesting to be, as well as Scott, to be in front of a man that was so present, and so present with what I would call the sacred masculine. And to be witnessed at that level was very powerful for me. So I'm really appreciative to Scott for that. Scott is a visionary who bridges psychology and spirituality, the personal and the political, humanity and nature, peacemaking and activism. What a great sentence. He is a leading advocate for consistent nonviolence in bringing the principles and practices of restorative justice to bear on the full range of social issues. He is the author of Active Peace and co-host of Restorative Dialogues. So you can go to Scott's website at activepeace.com. And so I'd love to bring on Scott.
Hello, Barbara.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to be with you. I'm sitting here in Santa Rosa, California, where it's another beautiful day, starting out a little overcast, but that'll probably burn off before too long.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm almost halfway through my 50-city book tour, so I've been on the road for a couple of months now.
And so you did you already do a speech in Santa Rosa?
I didn't have anything going in Santa Rosa. I'm here visiting some family. My next events are down in San Rafael, so I'll be leaving on Thursday to do some events down there.
Nice. So, Scott, tell me, how did you get started in this work?
Well, I was lost as a youth, like so many others, lost in the wilderness of the United States of America, without a lot of hope, without elders, without teachings, and you know, things looked pretty grim. I knew enough, I think, to know that our society was screwed up, but I had no sense of purpose around what my role was in healing that. So I did find my way into activism as kind of an unconscious way to empower myself and heal myself and do something for the world. So I spent 15 years as a professional environmental campaigner, and I enjoyed that work. And I burned out on it eventually after 15 years of doing it with no tools, still no consciousness, no interpersonal skills, which makes it challenging to do activism. And I had gotten married, and I was in the process of getting divorced. So I was having my own version of the dark night of the soul, burned out, divorced, still stuck in anger and unconsciousness, feeling like a victim. And in that dark place, I eventually my mind got quiet, and I realized something needed to change. I was bored with being angry and feeling like a victim. So I found my way to this peacemaker training in Boulder, Colorado. And that's where it started. That's where it started. That's where I learned mindfulness and meditation. It's where I first started practicing restorative justice. It's where I went to school, doing eco-psychology and studying psychotherapy. So that's a little bit of my story.
So I love that you said it was an unconscious way of trying to make a change. How can you explain to people that are listening that were like, how could you do 15 years of activism and helping and call it unconscious? Wasn't it doing some good, somebody would ask?
Well, absolutely. My point there is that I had no self-awareness. I had these habitual patterns and behaviors, as we all do, but I had no awareness about them or where they came from. I had no self-compassion I had no real self-empathy. I was very hard on myself. I was trapped, like so many others, in self-loathing, epidemic in our culture. And I was still stuck there. So, you know, that's why I feel like my activism, and I don't think I'm alone in this, was a way to heal, to feel empowered, to feel like I was contributing. And I did. You know, there were, you know, everything has a ripple effect. And, you know, I put a lot of negative energy into the world during the course of my activism. But, you know, there was ultimately it came from a place of love. And so, you know, that manifested too.
How does someone become more aware of their habitual patterns or self-loathing? What do you feel are steps that people can take?
Well, that's mindfulness, and that's meditation as one practice under that mindfulness umbrella. And the path that I outline in the book, Active Peace, A Mindful Path to a Nonviolent World, outlines four categories, four areas of practice. And mindfulness is the first. It's right there in the subtitle. It's so foundational to planting the seeds in the world. Call those seeds whatever you may, peace, love, planting the seeds that are really what we need right now. The ground of moving in the world in these challenging times that will get more challenging, the ground from which we move. You mentioned intention, the intention from which we move, that has to be grounded in our own relationship to ourselves, our own self-awareness, our self-acceptance, our basic goodness, our awareness of that basic goodness that we and everyone else has. It's such a cliche that, you know, to love other people, you have to love yourself. But, you know, cliches are around for a reason, you know, and I feel like there's truth there. But what does that mean? What does self-love really mean? I think it really just means self-acceptance and self-awareness. So basic mindfulness practices, which is just conscious awareness, right? It's just that paying attention. I think the root cause of our collective crisis and so much of our personal suffering is the belief in separateness. You mentioned the separation from God. I also write about our belief that we're separate from each other and from other species and the earth, as well as our spiritual essence as human beings. That's an incredibly deep wound that doesn't discriminate. You know, we all got our ticket punched with that when we came into the world, this culture, this society. And so it's a healing that is ultimately wanting to happen. And that starts with myself, with ourselves. I like to talk about how, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh coined that word interbeing, which really goes deeper, I think, than the word interrelatedness, interconnectedness. It really speaks to how deeply connected we are, that we arise from this ground of being in full participation with the earth and the sun and the rain and the soil and the other species and the other humans. It's like that word in the African language, Ubuntu. I am because you are. So it's a deep, you know, a deep spiritual level interrelatedness. And if the belief in separateness is the core wound, then the healing is to live into the truth of interbeing, our deep interrelatedness, because it's already true. So We don't have to do extreme things to bring that about, to make it happen. Mm-hmm. We just have to notice it. Notice mm-hmm. how we participate with the earth, with every breath, with every sip of water, every bite of food, how we participate with other people in all of these myriad relationships that we're involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And how we treat ourselves, you know, our self-talk, mm-hmm. our, you know, so many of us relate to this idea of being our own worst critics. And then, so those are the first three foundations, healing the relationship to self through mindfulness, bringing that into the realm of healing the relationship to the earth through nature-based practices, experiential, bringing the mindfulness into that relationship to the earth. And then with mm-hmm. that foundation, we start to get a real resilience and a real health that comes from those practices, a relaxation, bringing that into the challenging territory of interpersonal relationships, mm-hmm. and then ultimately into our service and our activism, because mm-hmm. that's such an important piece for being a fully functioning, empowered human being in the year 2016 and beyond, I believe, because we're not separate from the suffering mm-hmm. in the world. I think we're each called to do whatever's ours to do, something beyond the personal realm, beyond the nuclear family realm, but to do something to make the world healthier, saner, less violent.
I love what you said about the couple things. I just want to reflect on that, that can interbeing and the interrelatedness and how it's already there, that you don't have to do anything. I love that sentence. You don't have to do any extreme things. You just have to notice it. I think of the Course in Miracles, it says we're always looking for complex answers to our problems, but it's always a simple thing. And that I think of forgiveness from a non-dual standpoint, or even noticing spirit, that it's not the moment you think you have to take action, the moment you think you have to do something, you actually miss the presence of spirit. You miss the full presence of what forgiveness can mean in a freeing way. And so that is such a powerful statement. You don't have to do any extreme things to notice that you're connected, and that the mind always wants to think that it has to travel to, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing this, but traveling to crazy places and putting crazy things in your body to free yourself, and that when it's that powerful yet simple dropping in and connecting, as you were saying, to the soil and to yourself and to the rain I just really wanted to highlight that sentence, that you don't have to do extreme things to see that you're interbeing.
Yeah, right. Isn't it so much about relaxing? Just relaxing.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my main audiences are activists. And so that can sound really odd to somebody who's all worked up about mm-hmm. the state of the world. Relaxing? No, it's the opposite. But it's true, because the change that really happens in the world, I believe it comes more through our being, you know, the way we are, the way we show up, more through our being than it does our doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the first one to say that. Thomas Merton wrote about that. Father Daniel Berrigan spoke to that, incredible activist who crossed over recently. So, you know, there's this spiritual context for our work, which I know you and your listeners appreciate. And so to keep that in mind as we move. And you also mentioned something before I came on about non-attaching to outcome. So there's the secret also for being a grounded, resilient, happy activist, is to unattached from the outcome. Yeah, we can still do our work. as activists. We can still hold to our truth. We can still hold people accountable. But because there's so much we don't know, because the predicament that we're in is so vast, it's a much more powerful and healing place to come from to just do what's ours to do and you know, let it ripple out and let it be and not get completely 100% hung up on the outcome, because that can be a way to promote our own suffering and our burnout.
Yeah, to do, I like that statement, to do what is ours to do, and that that's a level of humbleness to say, okay, universe, God, what is your idea for my life? What is it that you want me to do today? It's a affirmation I give to my students, which is, what would you have me do? Where would you have me go, and with whom? And that level of listening, that level of surrender to our day, as well as to what you're saying, what is ours to do, that we all have a unique expression of what is kind of come forward. But too often I see people kind of waiting for, like, what's my gift or what's mine to do? They're kind of waiting for a delivery from FedEx to tell them, rather than, to your point, take action, rather than begin to let that unique expression out, whether it be through a poem or it be through picking up garbage at a park or it be through checking on a neighbor, that we're still looking for this, like, unless I've gotten 50,000 likes on Facebook for what I'm doing, it doesn't matter. And so there's such a such an important question that we need to ask. And I love what you said earlier about when you take that mindfulness and the love of self, and you and I love the steps that you, the way you put it, and there's such a genius in the steps you put it, the self, the mindfulness, and then to the earth, and then into your relationships, which I have seen many people skip that step. Like, well, I'm doing all this good stuff in my work, but never mind that I'm a total shit to my friends and my my wife or my husband. And so to take that into your relationships. And then the next step you said, which was to put it into action, because a big part of my audience is middle-class America, where I speak to a lot of people that are in privileged places, white middle-class Americans, and they're not taking action. So your audience is activists. My audience is people that are being told, love yourself more, love yourself more. If you're miserable, okay, just love yourself more. And they don't realize they're almost missing that energy into the north. They're missing that taking that action. They don't realize that it's not about loving themselves more. It's about actually that loving another is loving themselves, that there is no greater intimacy than knowing that you are me. And I love what Richard Rohr says in Falling Upward, A Spirituality of Subtraction. He says, you can't really know God or love God unless you have some form of action or service. And I loved how you put that in that sequence. Can you talk?
Yeah, well, you think about how, you know, how did Jesus do it? You know, how did Martin Luther King approach that? And Gandhi and the Bodhisattvas in the Buddhist tradition, you know, they didn't just focus on the light. You know, they mixed it up in the world. And I just come back to this felt sense that gets cultivated on through those foundations that I mentioned. It's a felt sense. It's not an intellectual concept. It's a felt sense of interbeing and interrelatedness. And it opens the heart. Mm-hmm. And what do you do when, you know, with all that compassion? Do you just keep heaping it onto yourself and increase your own comfort? Or do you step out of that zone and offer it back to the world? We're, you know, the elephant in the room, some rooms these days, Barbara, is that, you know, the whole life project on Earth is at risk. And that's been true for a long time, but it gets truer all the time because of the addiction to fossil fuels and other rare resources, water being an increasingly precious and rare resource, and the resource wars and the competition and the lack of maturity that says we're number one and we're going to do whatever it takes to protect this American way of life. So, yeah, it definitely tracks back to our very own country and our decision makers and our responsibility to do what's ours to do, to heal that. Yeah, I've met with audiences who I've tried to take them into the grief, into the suffering, and sometimes there's a lot of resistance to that, saying, oh, I've done that. I don't need to do that anymore. No, the spiritual way is just to focus on the positive. And I don't buy it. It certainly hasn't been my path, and it's not the path of those peacemakers who so many of us admire.
It's I love you saying that because we've already done that. I remember I was so surprised at that response when I first started doing booths and talking about 15 years ago, and I didn't realize, like, people were walking up and go, oh, self-acceptance? Oh, I did that once. And I was so shocked by the response and didn't have the maturity at the time to understand. And it's like now I can just see that we still think that we do growth and then we're done. We still have such a linear approach to our own growth, and we think, oh yeah, I looked within sometime in my 20s, and now I'm done. So I'm done with that whole growth, self acceptance, becoming more myself thing.
Right. Well, it's the same with grief too. The way that, you know, even when we dip into grief, allow ourselves to do that, we don't hang out there very long, and we don't tend to do it in community. So we don't do it very deeply, and we certainly don't do it on a regular basis as a practice. And one of the things that I'm feeling more and more is how grief really longs to be a practice, and the mourning. You know, if grief is the emotion, mourning, bringing mourning to our unmet needs, to the suffering in the world, is a powerful practice that is another gateway to opening the heart of compassion.
And doing that
in community.
And grief and grace are very similar in vibrations, and that making grief a practice, that's such a how does someone make grief a practice?
Well, again, I think it starts with that ability to be still and quiet and notice the deep truth that is that really is the life energy that moves in us, and what's alive in that in any given moment. And you know, if we come together in community, in the context of being real with each other, facing the state of the world, holding the paradox, you know, not just the darkness and the violence, but also all the nonviolence in the world and all the love and all the opportunity. When we come together to be real, grief comes up. You know, grief is in the room. Grief is in the field. So to be able to tune into it is the first step, and not censor it and give it some space, and to let ourselves be held as we do in rites of passage work, to be held by the community as we grieve, as we let go, and to just reframe it away from this idea that, you know, that's negative, that's not what we do in America, as reframe it as something that's powerful and true and heart-opening, and to just let ourselves have it when it's there. You know, if it's not there, fine. You know, there's lots of things that we can feel in any given moment, and there's no right way to feel. But I think we censor ourselves so much. We really do live in kind of a culture where there's a cult of happiness, where, you know, we're really supposed to be happy. And I think there's no other country in the world that does that like we do here. And yeah, there's lots to celebrate. And I'm all about seeing that side of life as well. But I think the juice is holding it all as true. It's so easy to fall onto one side of the fence that, oh, either it's all terrible, the world's going to hell, or the more spiritual, oh, it's all good, let's just think positive. I think the juice is really in the integration of all of that. I want to live in truth, you know, whatever that looks like. And to me, that includes a whole heck of a lot of violence and suffering that's in the world. And I do have some complicity in that as an American, and as somebody who's benefiting from these systems, you know, fossil fuel and you know, all of those other systems. We do benefit from those. There's comfort and there's ease, and we're kind of addicted to that. And so we're in a super deep predicament. It's not a problem with an easy answer. It's a predicament that we're going to have to live ourselves through and maybe hopefully out of. But as Jung said, you know, the way out is through. So, yeah, I just come back to these foundations because I feel like it's the missing piece, is these deep foundations of health and resilience, mindfulness, nature-based practices, interpersonal skills, foundations, and then from that foundation, moving out into the world to be of service and to do our political change. I think we're political animals. And I think we all have that in us, you know, because to the extent that we don't participate at all, we give away so much of our power and our autonomy, letting others decide, you know, how we're going to live. And that would be fine if we weren't on a course for not surviving at all. You know, we're undermining our life support system. And violence, I really see as the core problem, and it's caught up with us, and it's coming to a head. So, to do what's ours to do without it coming from a place of should or have to, but to tune in and let it be organic.
Undermining our life support system. That's a very powerful statement. And I also like your statement of the cult of happiness. In my teachings here, and Accepted as I Am, there are a lot about loving the darkness to know your humanity, or accepting your humanity to know your divinity. And then I think of my guest a couple months ago, Marianne Williamson, who wrote Tears to Triumph, and she was saying that too, that we've got to feel what's going on. And I love the way you just framed and the energy you brought forward for people to understand their grief, and that it, I think you've said it in many different ways in your book. Marianne said it, I've said it, and so many other people have said this message, that if you're not feeling sadness, if you're not feeling discomfort around what's happening in the world, then there's actually something wrong with you. It's not the opposite, where many people think there's something wrong with them, that they're sad or feeling discomfort or grief around what's going on in the world. And to what you said, which I love, you said it's in the energy field. It's there. Let's not censor it, and let's create a space for it. So what can really happen is that, like you said, that the juice in holding it all, the ability to be in that space of seeing the bigger picture or loving all parts of ourselves or the moment, and that it can lead us into that awareness that's beyond yet includes the what's happening in that moment. And as you said, it's like it's that organic process in that. And so could you, you know, with that being said, and this, the grief, and I noticed you emphasis on that with the grief, was getting in community to process that grief. How does someone begin to also bring nature into, because I know you have such, either two things I'd love to hear from you, Scott, is either your teachings around nature, because I know you have such wisdom to bring forward in that, or I'd love to hear about, I know you've done work with many different populations. I believe you worked with men that were in prisons. So whatever, you know, either one, whatever one you feel called to speak on, we have a little, probably about 5 or 8 minutes. So whatever you feel that your heart's calling you forward to talk about, I'd love to hear.
Sure. Well, let's just really stay with the foundations and healing that relationship with nature is another one. Because here again, we're already as connected to nature as we could possibly be, as we ever will be. So again, we don't have to do anything dramatic to make that happen, to make that true, because it's already true. So we only have to relax and notice. And two of the themes in those sections in the book are participation and reciprocity. So to notice and practice in a conscious way participation, noticing the way that we participate with the natural world, how it penetrates us and our energy ripples out to affect the natural world in every moment. Even in an urban area, a lot of people really want to believe that to be connected to nature, they have to be in a wild place or on a farm or something where there's a lot of trees. And yeah, that's beautiful, and that can make it easier to feel connected. But we don't need that, because just one tree, you know, one blade of grass, is a miracle, and we're not separate. And so, just bringing that awareness into it. And then the reciprocity, to be mindful of giving back. You know, we take so much from the earth, including our healing, you know, using in a way, you know, trees and rivers to feel, heal, to come back to center. But how much are we giving back personally and collectively? Not that much, I think, and certainly not enough. Thomas Berry wrote about how we need to get to a place where we have a mutually enhancing relationship with nature. So, you know, not just mitigating harm, not just band-aids, but mutually enhancing, that we are actually supporting the life-giving capacity of the earth and increasing it as we take what we need, you know, because we do have needs. We do have an impact. We're not going to eliminate our impact on the earth. But that idea of a mutually enhancing relationship speaks to how far we have to go. And that's humbling. That's humbling. So, you know, just that mindfulness with nature, the way this can relate back to grief, we can always take our grief and our sadness and any problem out into the natural world, you know, or to a tree in an urban area, you know, give that tree a good hug and let it go. And there's a way that the earth, you know, even the earth under the pavement can take that grief and that pain and that suffering and transmute it. And all of us have experienced the way that being in nature puts our lives and our problems into a larger perspective. So just to do that more and more consciously. Yeah, there's practices, but it boils down to just that, just deeper and deeper and deeper into that a conscious relationship with the earth and other species. There's bottomless opportunity to go deeper into that, and that cultivates our ability to feel. You know, you mentioned something about, you know, if people aren't feeling that there's something wrong with them, that's not going to help anybody to feel like there's something wrong with them, because really we just need to relax and open to the feeling that's there. So this is a path for cultivating the ability to do that feeling that we talked about, because we all have these tremendous capacities that are untapped, you know, not just in our psyches, but in our bodies, the wisdom of the body. So, I love, you know, the practices can be simple, but they're also challenging because it's our best intentions can easily get overridden by our habitual patterns and beliefs and our fear and our insecurity. So, just practicing at that level, that self-awareness, again, I'll say it again, is foundation number one.
And then I love that you brought it back to that the connection to nature is already there. It's not something you have to invent. It's not something you have to make happen. It's not something you have to push. It's in the self-acceptance process teachings, I talk about how it's not about healing, but it's about revealing. It's not about getting, it's about letting. It's about yielding or opening. And so I love how you brought that back, that again, it's not, I just felt a deepening in my own body of when you reminded me that nature is, the connection's already there, and that it's great if I do travel out to a forest and such, but it can be in a blade of grass. And so that's such a potent reminder, and I appreciate you for that. And and I agree, telling people that there's something wrong with them if they're not feeling, my intention with that was to flip the conversation that usually happens in people's heads, that they think there's something wrong with them, that they are caring about the earth or hurting. And I feel your point that there's no guilting people into trying to care or shaming them into trying to care does not work. So point taken on that.
Yeah, if it did, the world would already be a lot different, because we tend to put a lot of energy into shame and blame and punishment. Doesn't seem to work very well.
It doesn't seem to motivate people to change. I don't know why. More attacking words and shame just doesn't seem to inspire them to grow.
Yeah, I think we got our fill of that before we were probably about 5 years old, right?
So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, sharing your message, your website, the number 4activepeace.com. And I'm noticing here, too, that people can go to your events page and it has all your upcoming talks. Is there any other events that you would like to highlight, or any information you'd like to highlight, Scott, before we conclude today?
Well, I would love it if people would go to the website and look at the events. I need to get a few more in there. Look at the schedule. There's the whole route of the tour is outlined there, and I would love to connect with people along the way, and just because I come back to this idea of support. I'm just really feeling personally how the smallest outpouring of support, you know, the most humble thing, it makes all the difference when you're in the midst of a 50 city over 4 month road trip book tour. So I welcome that. And I try to offer support as I go to people, and I hope the book is supportive to people in their lives and their unfolding. And so I invite people to check out the book and check out the website, and that's a great place to start.
Thank you. Yeah, and there's also, if people, when they go to your website, you have some of your writings there, you have a meditation there, and some of your counseling services that people can look through as well.
Yes, and a free ebook when people sign up on the homepage, and that's the way to really stay connected to me and this path as we go forward.
Oh,
so
nice!
I invite that as well. It's a workbook on interpersonal relationships.
How nice! Somehow I'm so glad you pointed that out. My eyes didn't even see that, so I'm glad. So glad you brought that up. That's such a great resource for people. Well, thank you again, Scott. And so that website is foractivepeace.com, and you can see his upcoming talks and ebook and writings and services. Thank you so much, friend. I really appreciate your coming on the show today.
Thank you, Barbara, and blessings on your work and blessings to your listeners.
Oh, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye for now. So thank you again, everyone, for taking this time to connect deeper to yourself, to life. And I hope you felt inspired as I did by Scott. And you could just feel his peacefulness, his presence that was coming through, and his energy to really emphasize those steps that he talks about, the foundations, and his book, Act of Peace, really good read. It really brings these things that, these concepts that seem sometimes looming, like mindfulness or connection to self, your interrelationships, connection to nature, and he puts it in a way that is really easy to read, easy to understand, and pleasant. It's a pleasant read as well. So thank you again for listening to Calling All Leaders and Healers, where you come to remember who and what you truly are, and that there is more love, more beauty, more joy, more you that's constantly seeking to express, and that through paradoxically loving all parts of yourself, that really accepting and loving yourself as you are and your life as you are, you create an energy or a foundation for something or a platform for that you to emerge. Process that I use with my students is that instead of asking why me, why this problem, but what wants to emerge through me, and that of course comes from my teacher Michael Beckwith in his visioning process of using that what wants to emerge through me. So thank you again for listening, and we will have again. I have just incredible people I get to connect with, and I get to connect you with. And so thank you for, please pass this information on about Active Peace. Please pass the show on. We need you. Body, Mind, Spirit Radio needs you to be our angels. Angels means a messenger of love. And we need you to be a messenger of love. And after all, isn't that why we are here, to be messengers of love? So you matter. You are significant. And the world, your community, needs you to really come forward in giving love. So do that today. It's never too late. Never too late to do that. Never too late to come forward, whether you're in your 90s or you are listening to this and you're 19, that today can be the next best day of your life. And so make that decision now, that when you make that kind of commitment and conviction, there's no authority that can go against that life is truly, truly for you, that love is truly for you, that there is a constant energy from the cosmos that is truly working on your behalf. And when you work on behalf of life, life gives more life. Life loves to prevent or promote, not prevent, promote more life. And so when you begin to tap into that realm of good, that realm of life, you begin to feel the truth of your being. So again, that website is foractivepeace.com. You can go to my website and look at the Self-Acceptance Process Certification course starting in January, which is filling, and that's the Self-Acceptance Process tab at the top. And thank you so much. Please pass on this info and make it a wonderful day. Take care. Bye-bye.